Welcome to Roots of Faith, coming to you from the Synagogue Without Walls. Each week, Ross Nichols teaches from the historic Temple Sinai in St. Francisville, Louisiana, inspiring people to live a more biblically authentic lifestyle. And now, Ross Nichols.
All right, shalom and welcome to Sunday Shul. If you're listening in live and you're not aware, we have a site we're testing out, trying to make sure that we've got all the audio and video working. If you're just listening to the audio and you want to try something that we're trying new here tonight, go to mogulus.com, mogulus.com/roots of faith, all one word, mogulus.com/roots of faith. The intent is to put our webcast in a video format up so that people can see and hear, for those that have eyes to see and ears to hear. So trying something new. Hopefully it'll work out. So shalom and welcome. Tonight, this is my fifth class based upon James Tabor's Restoring Abrahamic Faith. It is the second class, last week was the first, on the way, or following the way, of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, following the way of God. These classes are especially important to me. When you talk about following the way, tonight's class is probably one of the most important messages that I can teach. For one, I feel a very special calling to lead people in the direction, and I really take to heart the words of the prophet Isaiah, who in his day and time, in Isaiah chapter 40, the passage says, a voice is crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of Hashem, prepare the way of God. So because this has such special import to me, all week as I studied and prayed about this particular class, I think that I came up with some insights that I hope to share that will be very instructional for you. In part one, last week's class on following the way, I shared that this way can be defined by five key terms found within the pages of the Hebrew Bible. Namely, those Hebrew terms, and I think that if you're going to learn any Hebrew words, these are the five. The first one is chesed. If you're spelling that, you can spell it, just spell it like it sounds, I tell people, because really what we're doing here is we're taking a Hebrew word and representing it in English letters. So I usually spell it C-H-E-S-E-D, chesed. Chesed means loving kindness, loyal love. I stressed last week that one of the key points in the definition is loyalty, chesed. The next word in the five is mishpat, which means or is typically translated as justice. The next word is tzedakah, which means or is translated righteousness. The next of the five terms is emet, which is typically translated as truth. And the fifth of the five words is emunah. Emunah, and it means faithfulness. These terms, as I pointed out last night in Matthew chapter 23, are referred to by Yeshua, or at least some of these, as the weightier matters of the Torah. But the question for tonight's class is, where are we to go in order to understand how these terms apply to God's way for humanity? Where are we to go? And I wanted to open up by reading a passage from James Tabor's book, Restoring Abrahamic Faith. It's on page 35. He says, according to the Hebrew Bible, there is one primary source for knowing and understanding the way of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. One must turn to what is called in the Hebrew Scriptures the Torah and the Testimony. Surely one of the most misleading English translations of any term in the entire Hebrew Bible is the rendering of the Hebrew word Torah as the law. The modern English word law in no way conveys the beautiful, highly positive, and compelling meaning of the original Hebrew concept. The very first psalm describes the way of the righteous person. So I wanted to start this evening
if you would, open up to Psalm 1. Psalm 1, and we're going to talk about tonight the way, and then I'm going to also get into what I would call the great falling away, or a departure from the way. So in Psalm 1, it says, "Happy are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or take the path that sinners tread, or sit in the seat of scoffers. But their delight is in the Torah of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and on His Torah they meditate day and night. They're like trees planted by streams of water, which yield their fruit in its season, and their leaves do not wither. In all that they do, they prosper." When you read the words of the psalmist here, you get a very, very positive view of the Torah. Now, it goes on in Psalm 1 to contrast that with the wicked. So, when we talk about the blessed or the happy in the first portion of Psalm 1, we talk about what makes them so. The fact that they don't follow the advice of the wicked or sit in the seat of the scornful. Their delight is in the Torah of God. And we talk about the fact that any time in the Hebrew Scriptures that we read about the Torah, it's in a most positive way. Now, here are a few examples. While we're in the Psalms, just look at Psalm chapter 19 or Psalm 19. I'd like to begin in verse 7. I'm going to go through several passages tonight because I want to build a case that whenever we talk about the Torah, which is poorly, wrongly actually, translated as law, when we read about it in the Scriptures, we get a very positive feel. So here's an example. Psalm 19, beginning in verse 7. "The Torah of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh are sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is clear, enlightening the eyes. The fear of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and dripping of the honeycomb." Now get this. "Moreover, by them is your servant warned. By keeping them, there is great reward. But who can detect their errors? Clear me from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from the insolent or from proud thoughts. Do not let them have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, my rock and my redeemer." Very positive. Look at Psalm 37. I'm just going to pick up a few of these. This week, I read through every reference in the Hebrew Bible to the word Torah. In other words, I looked up every single reference of the Torah in the Hebrew Scriptures, and it's a pretty remarkable study. I encourage you to do this. Psalm 37, beginning in verse 28, please. "For Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh loves justice. He will not forsake His faithful ones. The righteous shall be kept safe forever, but the children of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and live in it forever. The mouth of the righteous utter wisdom, and their tongues speak justice. The Torah of their God is in their hearts. Their steps do not slip." It's a powerful phrase. The Torah of their God is in their hearts. And we're going to talk about this throughout the class tonight. But one of those, if you think about it, this is the goal of the New Covenant, as Jeremiah describes it in chapter 31. It's also in Isaiah 51. "Though you who have the Torah in your hearts." That's a specific group, right? Verse 32. "The wicked watch for the righteous and seek to kill them. The Lord will not abandon them to their power or let them be condemned when they are brought to trial, wait for Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh and keep to his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land, and you will look on the destruction of the wicked. Notice the reference in verse 34 to his way. You know, that's what we're talking about tonight, is to keep and follow the way of God. And it's very much tied in and associated with the Torah of God. Now look at Psalm 40. And there are many, many other examples. These are just a few. Psalm 40. I want to begin in verse 6. And the reason I'm going to do this is because those who come from a Christian background are familiar with this particular text or a version of it. Psalm 40, verse 6. Sacrifice and offering you don't desire, but you've given me an open ear. It could be translated, my ears you have dug open. It's really, think of the idea of the servant who's mentioned in Psalm 40. It's also in Isaiah 50, the idea that they have an open ear because the servant is listening for God's call. Burnt offering and sin offering you've not required. Verse 7, then I said, here am I. In the scroll of the book it is written of me. I delight to do your will, O my God. Your Torah is within my heart. So here's another example of the Torah in the heart. This is the goal and meaning. It's the very thing that God wanted when He talked about His commandments. It's the circumcision of the heart. It's a very key thing throughout the Torah and the prophets. Now, just as a point, this particular passage is quoted in the book of Hebrews in the Christian scriptures. There it says, sacrifice and offering you don't desire, a body you have prepared. Here in the Hebrew, it says nothing about a body being prepared. It says, my ear you've opened. So most scholars would say that that's, I believe that comes from the Septuagint. All right, let me read a couple more passages. Verse 10, or verse 9. I have told the glad news of deliverance in the great congregation. See, I have not restrained my lips. As you know, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, I have not hidden your saving help within my heart. I have spoken of your faithfulness and your salvation. I have not concealed your steadfast love and your faithfulness from the great congregation. Do not, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, withhold your mercy from me. Let your steadfast love and your faithfulness keep me safe forever. Notice the repetition of these key words. For evils have encompassed me. Without number, my iniquities have overtaken me until I cannot see. They are more than the hairs of my head, and my heart fails me. Oh, be pleased, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, to deliver me. Oh, Lord, make haste to help me. This particular psalm also mentions the writing of the Torah within the heart. Now look at Psalm 78. A couple more passages from the Psalms. Beginning in verse 1. Now, I'm reading from the NRSV. Give ear, O my people, to my teaching. Now, some translations will say law, but the Hebrew there is Torah. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings from of old, things that we have heard and known that our ancestors have told us. We will not hide them from their children. We will tell them to the coming generation the glorious deeds of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh and his might and the wonders that he has done. He established a decree in Jacob and appointed a Torah in Israel, which he commanded our ancestors to teach their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and rise up and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments, and that they should not be like their ancestors, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation whose heart was not steadfast, whose spirit was not faithful to God. Let me tell you something about this. When I read this, and it talks about, listen, pay attention, take heed to the teaching, when it's talking about the Torah here, when it says that God gave and appointed a Torah in Israel, think about the purpose of that. It's so that they would teach their children, and that then they would teach their children, a new generation. And the purpose of all this is that they might have hope in God. So when I read that, I think that if you don't teach it to your children, they lose hope. It brings hope. Teaching the Torah to the next generation brings hope. And when I read this, one of the main points is that they don't forget the commandments. It's very interesting also that when it says that they should not be like their ancestors, a stubborn and rebellious generation, notice a generation whose heart was not steadfast and their spirit was not faithful. So those that don't follow this way, that don't take on the yoke of the Torah, you could say, based upon this text, that the heart is not steadfast and the spirit is unfaithful. Now, those are powerful thoughts. Look at Psalm 94. Very positive view, though, all of these texts. Just a couple of passages. Psalm 94, beginning in verse 12. Happy are those whom you discipline, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and whom you teach out of your Torah, giving them respite from days of trouble until a pit is dug for the wicked. For Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh will not forsake his people, he will not abandon his heritage, for justice will return to the righteous, and all the upright in heart will follow it. All the upright in heart will follow this ancient way, the Torah. Now, this really ties to Abrahamic faith and the fact that God truly does remember His promises to Abraham. Look at Psalm 105. Psalm 105, beginning in verse 42. For He remembered His holy promise and Abraham His servant. So He brought His people out with joy, His chosen ones with singing. He gave them the lands of the nations, and they took possession of the wealth of the peoples, that they might keep His statutes and observe His Torah, praise Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Did you catch the reason? In other words, the very reason that He rescued and redeemed Israel from Egypt and gave them the land that the nations had possessed was for this very reason. You know, and that really ties back in to the original promise that He gives to Abraham. Because ultimately what Abraham is called to do is to be a light to the nation, a kingdom of priests. He put Israel in the center of the earth so that Israel might exemplify His way to all the nations on the earth. He put them in the center of the earth for that very reason. And here it says that the reason He brought them out was so that they might keep His statutes and observe His Torah. Remember when Moses goes to Pharaoh, one of the things that he tells him is, we need to leave, let us go, so that we might keep a festival to our God. The point was to keep the way. Look at Genesis chapter 18. I want to touch on this one more time as we talk about the way. Genesis 18, verse 19, where God says, remember verse 17, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do, seeing that Abraham shall become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? No, for I've chosen him that he may charge his children and his household after him to keep the way of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh by doing righteousness and justice." By doing righteousness and justice. Look at Genesis 26 while we're right here. There's an interesting passage. Now this is about Isaac. And it's actually where God appears to Isaac. Verse 2, Genesis 26, verse 2. And Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh appeared to Isaac and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Settle in the land that I shall show you. Reside in this land as an alien, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will fulfill the oath that I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your offspring as numerous as the stars of heaven, and will give to your offspring all these lands, and all the nation of the earth shall gain blessing for themselves through your offspring." Notice this. "Because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." There, where it says laws in Hebrew, the root word is Torah. He kept his Torah. Now go back to the Psalms. I'm not going to read the individual passages, but in Psalm 119, I often encourage people to read this and truly think about it. Psalm 119, all one has to do is study this particular psalm to really come away and realize how important David felt the Torah was. I mean, if you can read Psalm 119 and come away with the idea that the Torah is not a vital part of a faith in God or in following the way, then you're missing something. Over 18 times, David declares his love for and delight in the Torah of God. Something very, very positive. In fact, I do want to hit a couple of those passages just so some people, I don't know if when I say read this on your own, if they will. So just I'll start off and just kind of hit a few of the verses. Look at verses 1 through 3. "Happy are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the Torah of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Happy are those who keep His decrees, who seek Him with their whole heart, who also do no wrong but walk in His ways." Look at verse 18. "Open my eyes so that I might behold wonderful things out of your Torah." Skip down to verse 44. "I will keep your Torah continually, forever and ever. I shall walk at liberty, for I have sought your precepts. I will also speak of your decrees before kings and shall not hide, shall not be put to shame. I find my delight in your commandments." Look at verse 70. I just have some of these marked. "Their hearts are fat and gross, but I delight in your Torah. It's good for me that I was humbled so that I might learn your statutes. The Torah of your mouth is better to me than thousands of gold and silver pieces." Look at verse 92. "If your Torah had not been my delight, I would have perished in my misery. I will never forget your precepts, for by them you have given me life." Look at verse 97. "Oh, how I love your Torah. It is my meditation all the day long." 105. "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." Anybody want to guess what word he's talking about there? He's talking about the Torah. Verse 113. "I hate the double-minded, but I love your Torah." 142, "Your righteousness is an everlasting righteousness, and your Torah is truth." Over and over, David talks about the joy and the delight that is found when one truly takes on the Torah. You know, there's nothing but positive when you read about the Torah in the Hebrew Bible. So what does it mean? Most of you grew up with a translation just like I did that translated it as law. But as I started the class, and as James mentions in the book, that's one of the most misfortunate translations in all of the Hebrew Bible. Because what Torah really means is instruction or teaching. And, you know, if you do a word study in it, you can get into a lot of depth. But that's basically what the word means. Specifically, it refers to the instructions of God that He gave to Moses at Sinai. Right? But in a broader sense, you could say that it refers to the totality of divine teaching to, of, or from God to man. So all of God's teaching, or as Deuteronomy puts it, every word that proceeds forth out of the mouth of God. Remember, Yeshua quotes that in the temptation. So what I'm saying is that when I talk about Torah, in a broad sense, you could say that it includes all divine instruction that's contained in the Torah, in the prophets, and in the writings. So it is the instruction, it is the teaching of or from God to man. So why would you not be interested in studying the instruction or the teaching of God? Moses often, or actually throughout the Torah, whenever we study the Torah, we talk about the term Torah, most often, I guess I should say, it refers in most people's minds to that teaching contained and written by Moses between Genesis and Deuteronomy. So the five books of Moses are known properly as the Torah. It's declared to be the Word of God. It's the Torah of Moses, it's often called. A lot of times when you study the Torah, you will come across phrases or words that indicate that it is eternal. It is eternal. Yeshua believed this, and we'll talk about that at a later point. Now, when I started, one of the things that I talked about was that I'm going to be talking tonight also about a departure from the way, or a falling away. One of the most frequent emails that I get, and it comes at me in different ways, but most people who write in who have a problem with what I'm teaching, i.e. a Torah-based faith, approach their concern with what I'm teaching from the writings of Paul. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight. So I know that some people have probably find this to be very touchy. Now, when we talk about Paul and the Torah, I will say that this is one of the most controversial topics of our time, because many from within the rank and file of various forms of Christianity are beginning to wake up to this idea that there is a Hebraic perspective that perhaps they didn't grow up with. So what they're doing is they're going back to the Hebrew Bible, they're going back to the Torah, but they have questions. And most of the questions that they have are based upon their understanding of the writings of Paul. But the writings of Paul are not only controversial now. Paul was perhaps one of the most controversial figures in his own time. We're going to talk a little bit about that. It wasn't like he had written a book on how to influence people, you know, gain friends and influence people. But I will start off by saying, like Yeshua and the disciples, Paul was Jewish. Acts chapter 23, verse 6 says that he was a Pharisee, the son of Pharisees. And then in the letter to the Philippians, he says that he is much the same. He's a Pharisee, claims to be a Hebrew of Hebrews. In fact, let's go ahead and read that. Let me just open up to that particular passage just to kind of get you ready for what I'm going to talk about in a minute. To the Philippians. And it says, if anyone else has reason, Philippians 3, verse 5, if anyone else has reason to be confident in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day, a member of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew, born of Hebrews, as to the Torah, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to righteousness under the Torah, blameless. This is Paul. Can you be righteous under the Torah? He says so right here. Blameless. Now, yeah, sometimes Paul seems to have a positive view of the Torah. So I'm going to read a couple of passages from the writings of Paul tonight, because I think whenever anyone begins to talk about a Torah-based faith or returning people to a Torah-based faith, one of the first things that they're going to come in contact with are the things that they grew up with and their teachings that they became familiar with as a child, and these are some of those. So I'm going to look at Romans 3, beginning in verse 27. Now, I am basing my classes off of the book Restoring Abrahamic Faith, but I have made these my own. So these are just some, although James does mention some of these points, I think I'm taking this issue on Paul a little bit further, primarily because so many people that listen to me are from the rank and file of Christianity. So, Romans 3, verse 27. Then what becomes of boasting? It is excluded. By what Torah? By that of works? No, but by the Torah of faith. Now, some would argue that law here in Paul's letters does not always refer to the Torah, but let me keep reading. Verse 28. For we hold that a person is justified by faith apart from works prescribed by the Torah. Or is God the God of Jews only? Is He not the God of Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. Since God is one, and He will justify the circumcised on the ground of faith and the uncircumcised through this same faith, do we then overthrow the Torah by this faith? By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the Torah. Now, different people can argue various understandings of that particular text. The point I wanted to make is that at the very least, in that last passage in verse 31 of Romans 3, it appears that Paul is saying we do not overthrow the Torah by this faith. In chapter 7, verse 12 of Romans, he says another kind word about the Torah. So the Torah is holy, the commandment is holy and just and good. Look at verse 14. For we know that the Torah is spiritual. Look at verse 22. For I delight in the Torah of God in my inmost self. Now, what I will tell you is that I had to skip a lot to paint this positive picture. Okay? I'm only, somebody's listening and they're going, well, you're just picking that to pieces. Yes, because I want to make a point here. That there are times in Paul's speech that he speaks very positively about the Torah. Now, what I said when I started, and I tried to show you through example by reading many, many texts in the Hebrew Bible, is that according to David, according to Moses, everything they say about the Torah is positive. Everything and every word that they utter about the Torah is the most positive. Now, 1 Timothy 1:8 is another thing that I have in my notes. And again, I'm just picking a piece out. I'm not going to read it. Paul there says that the Torah is good and adds the qualifying statement if it is used legitimately. It's used legitimately. Okay? So even with the qualifier, the Torah is good. Now, while at times Paul speaks very positively about Torah, especially when he quotes David, for instance, you know, because he's quoting the Psalms, he has to speak positively there because that's all the Psalms do, is speak positive about the Torah. But it is, and I will say this with a very clear conscience, it is now and always has been that the writings of Paul have been used to proclaim an end to the Torah. I think it's very clear that that is where most people get the idea. Now, as we talk through this, there is a thought that some espouse that says that's because people misunderstand him. So We'll talk about that in a minute. So here's something else. Followers of Pauline theology think that Christ, as he puts it in his writings, was the end of the Torah. They get this from Romans chapter 10, verse 4. There it says that Christ is the end of the law for righteousness for those that believe, right? All right. Well, there are some who say that the Greek word translated there, it's telos, that Greek word actually means the goal and not the end. In other words, there are believers, let's say Pauline Christians, who believe in the writings of Paul and attempt to really make sense out of it, that would say Paul never said that the Torah is done away with. He simply meant that the Torah pointed to Christ, and that Christ, in his view, was the end of the Torah, the goal. It was the thing it pointed to for those who seek to live a righteous life. Okay? Be that as it may, most people understand this passage to say that the Torah is done, that it's over. That's the way people view that text, and it's the reason I put it in tonight. Followers of Pauline Christianity, which I would say is the majority of, the standard church theology, basically, say, based upon their understanding of Paul, that those who teach a Torah-based faith as a means of salvation are legalists, Judaizers. I know this list pretty good. I get this sometimes. Carnal and not spiritual. That's pretty common. Fallen from grace. What are some other ones? Of the flesh. Sometimes even as harsh to say that, maybe evil. I don't know that I've heard that one. But I have heard cursed. Because you've fallen from grace and you're cursed. Many do what? Apostate. Yeah, I get that one. Good one, Sherry. Survey says. Many associate the letter of the Torah with death. Now, this is the one that really gets me. And it's the one that I have one of the biggest problems with. The whole letter versus spirit dichotomy, this whole letter versus the spirit thing, is one that is prevalent in the church's understanding of the Torah. It's one of the biggest things that people use when they talk to me. Well, you're under the letter of the law. You adhere to the letter of the law and not the spirit of the law. On and on and on. But I find this, and many others do as well, very clearly, at least my understanding of Paul's writings, in such as Galatians, the book of Galatians as a whole, and especially in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. So look at Galatians chapter 3. So for all those who wanted me to teach from Paul for so long, here it is. I might get some notes and say, don't do that again. Galatians chapter 3, I want to start in verse 19. Now this is from Paul. He says, "Why then the Torah? It was added because of transgressions, until the seed would come to whom the promise had been made. And it was ordained through angels by mediator." Now, a mediator involves more than one party, but God is one. "Is the Torah then opposed to the promises of God? Certainly not. For if a Torah had been given that could make alive, then righteousness would indeed come through the Torah. But the Scripture has imprisoned all things under the power of sin, so that what was promised through faith in Yeshua the Messiah might be given to those who believe." It goes on and he talks about he says that before faith came, we were imprisoned and guarded under the Torah until faith would be revealed. In other words, according to his view, as I understand it, the faith didn't come into the picture until Yeshua. That you were governed by these rules and this strict teacher, tutor, But then once that came, notice what he says, therefore, the Torah was our disciplinarian until Christ came so that we might be justified by faith. But now that faith has come, we're no longer subject to a disciplinarian. All right. He says in Galatians chapter 3, and I want people to study this and think about it. First of all, think about the fact that in the Psalms, David's view of the Torah was that it did bring life. Not only was that David's view, but Moses says it as well. Guess who else says it? Yeshua. Man shall live by every word that cometh forth out of the mouth of God. I mean, over and over, the idea that the Torah brings life is there. And this particular understanding that is prevalent in the church is that the Torah does not bring life. In fact, they would say worse. So here's the way this starts off, and the point that I wanted to cover was that according to Paul in Galatians 3, the Torah was added because of transgression. Okay? We're no longer under the law, as if that's a bad thing, when later in Galatians chapter 4, we're told that Yeshua was born under the law. Okay? That's Galatians chapter 4. The other thing, in Galatians chapter 4, we have this allegory about two women and the two wives. One is Hagar and the other is Sarah. And ultimately, the covenant at Sinai is even compared to Hagar, and seemingly, according to my understanding, what Paul says here is to be thrown out. Okay? Throw out the bondwoman. Now, these are tough words, but they're the things that I grew up hearing. That all of these points that I'm making about, you know, you're no longer in need of a tutor, you don't need a disciplinarian, that's the bondwoman, it engenders slavery, throw it out. Cast the bondwoman out. You didn't have faith before. Now you have faith. You don't need that. I don't think that is what David believed. I don't think it's what Moses taught. I don't think it's what Joshua said. I don't believe it's what Isaiah or Jeremiah or Hezekiah or Habakkuk would think. I don't believe anymore that it's what I think. That those things are done away with. One more passage. Actually, maybe two more. See, I started earlier so I could go longer. 1 Timothy. And here's a letter to the young Timothy. Here, let's start at verse 8. 1 Timothy 1:8, because I mentioned this a minute ago. Now we know Timothy, he's talking to young Timothy, that the Torah is good if one uses it legitimately. This means understanding. This is what legitimate means. Paul's theology. This means understanding that the Torah is laid down not for the innocent, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the godless and sinful, for the unholy and profane, for those who kill their father or mother, for murderers, fornicators, sodomites, slave traders, liars, perjurers, and whatever else is contrary to the sound teaching that conforms to the glorious gospel of the blessed God which He entrusted to me. Alright? That's Paul's view. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Second Corinthians 3, okay, he says, verse 4, such, 2 Corinthians 3, verse 4, such is the confidence that we have through Christ toward God, not that we are competent of ourselves to claim anything is coming from us. Our competence is from God, who has made us competent to be ministers of a new covenant, not of letter, but of spirit. For the letter kills, but the spirit gives life. Now, if the ministry of death, chiseled in letters on stone tablets, I just want to stop for a minute. This is tough for me. To think of, anybody remember who wrote those letters in that stone tablet? The Creator of heaven and earth, with His finger, wrote words, the 10 words, in the stone. And those words, my understanding of this is that they're called here a ministry of death. 2 Corinthians chapter 3. I would encourage people to look at that. Let me keep reading. He says, "Now if the ministry of death chiseled in letters on stone tablets came in glory so that the people of Israel could not gaze at Moses' face because of the glory of his face, a glory now set aside, how much more will the ministry of the Spirit come in glory? For if there was glory in the ministry of condemnation, much more does the ministry of justification abound in glory. Indeed, what once had glory has lost its glory because of the greater glory. For if what was set aside came through glory, much more has the permanent come in glory." That particular passage is, you know, various people attempt to explain it in different ways. I understand when I read these that Paul is very hard to understand. Okay? It's a difficult writing. Now, let me say this in fairness, because I've covered some points that I struggle with. In fairness, I've read many books and papers by various scholars who seek to redeem Paul's writings and show that he is very pro-Torah and that he's been sorely and simply misunderstood. Okay? Now, that could be the case, because my main point that I wanted to bring up is what I read to you, these passages and many, many more that are written by Paul, or at least attributed to Paul, have been taken by the church to mean that the very way of God that he says is eternal is done away with. So if there are some who can understand these writings in a different light, one that saves Paul and at the same time says that the Torah is still eternally valid, as God said, then more power to them. These are just very difficult passages. And my point is that most people understand these things to say that the Torah is not a positive thing, that it's negative. Okay? So are we okay there? Now, and I'll give you an example. I brought this book with me. I almost forgot. This is Our Father Abraham, Jewish Roots to the Christian Faith. It's one of the first books that I read when I was beginning to study the Jewish roots of Christianity, is what I called it then. And in this book, he quotes, he's got a section called Paul and the Law. And just as an example, he quotes Pinchas Lapid, who is an author, who states forcefully, "Throughout Paul's lifetime, his people remained Israel. His Bible was the Tanakh. His God was the God of his fathers. His Messiah was a Jew, and from Jews alone emerged his mother church. Despite all of his Christocentricity, the Israelites remained his beloved brethren and blood relatives even after Easter." And then he goes on to talk about Paul to say he's neither anti-Semitic nor anti-Judaist. He is not even an apostate, much less an antinomian, meaning that he's against the law. So he's trying to justify that Paul is not saying what people think he says. Expressions that would have horrified him. "In his own way, he remained a believing Jew and a missionary, but above all else, he is a hero of the faith." All right? So there are some who would say that Paul is salvageable, that you can look at his writings and understand them a little bit differently. I would like to believe that that is the case. I really would. I taught this for years, but I have to be honest. When I read these writings now, I get a different impression. I have to say that when I read some of the things like I read in Galatians, you know, cast out and so forth, I have a tough time with that because I don't see that those writings are to be cast out. And I'm going to talk about why that is. So while I'm being honest, and I tell you I struggle with the writings of Paul, I'm not the only one that struggles with the writings of Paul. Now, a lot of people would say, well, Ross, you just don't understand. Well, help me out. Now, I don't need everybody that listens in to send me a book because I probably have read them. I'm just saying, here's an example. How about Peter? Anybody remember that? Peter had problems understanding. Look at 2 Peter. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 14. Now, Peter puts this in his letter. You know why he has to put this in his letter? Because there's a lot of people in his day that are having struggles with Paul's writings. All right? Therefore, verse 14, beloved, while you are waiting for these things, strive to be found by him at peace without spot or blemish, and regard the patience of our Lord as salvation. So also our beloved brother Paul wrote to you according to the wisdom given him, speaking of this as he does in all of his letters. There are some things in them hard to understand. He's talking about Paul's letters. Which the ignorant and unstable twist to their own destruction as they do the other scriptures. You therefore, now catch the warning before everybody says, well, there you go, or Ross is just ignorant and unstable. Catch the rest of it. You therefore, beloved, since you are forewarned, beware that you are not carried away with the error of the lawless and lose your own stability. So, Peter is saying, some people wrestle with Paul's writing. So he said, here's a warning for you. Don't get carried away with those who are lawless. You know what I think is going on here? I'm fixing to show you that what people began to do was when they heard Paul speak, when they would go to the synagogue and he would go there, there was this idea, there was this tone, there was a certain teaching style that at the very least he was understood as saying that the Torah is done away with. That's the point that they thought. Now look at, so let me give you an example. Look at Acts chapter 18. So you don't think, well, Ross is the only one that sees it like this. Look at Acts 18. And beginning in verse, I'm just going to read two verses, verse 12 and 13. But when Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews made a united attack on Paul and brought him before the tribunal. And they said, this man is persuading people to worship God in ways that are contrary to the Torah. Alright? So this is the charge, and you could say, well, maybe it was a false charge. Well, let me give you another example. Look at Acts 21. Acts 21, beginning in verse 17. When we arrived at Jerusalem, the brothers welcomed us warmly. The next day, Paul went with us to visit James, and all the elders were present. After greeting them, he related one by one the things that God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. And when they heard it, they praised God. Now, get this. Then they said to him, you see, brother, how many thousands of believers there are among the Jews, and they are all zealous for the Torah? What do you think this topic? Now, as soon as Paul comes here, this is the one thing they talk with him about. Watch this. They have been told about you, Paul, that you teach all the Jews living among the Gentiles to forsake Moses and that you tell them not to circumcise their children or observe the customs. What then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you've come. So do what we tell you. We have four men who are under a vow. Join these men, go through the rite of purification with them, and pay for the shaving of their heads. Thus, all will know that there is nothing in what they have been told about you, but that you yourself observe and guard the Torah. Now, here's the way I think that went down. Paul, you're not going to believe what they're saying about you. Paul, they're actually saying that you, and we don't believe that, do we, Paul? That you've been telling people that the Torah of Moses is done away with. I mean, that's ludicrous, because God says it's forever. So here's what we're going to do. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to do what we tell you to do. And then that way, all will know that there is nothing in what they've been told about you, but that you yourself observe and keep, guard the Torah. Now, this would be a perfect opportunity for him to say, well, guys, I am teaching them that. There's another view of Paul that says when he's around James, he does one thing, and when he's teaching these Gentile groups, he teaches another. So look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Now, this class is not all on Paul, by the way, but it's important that this is covered. It's essential, because the people that I'm trying to reach are clearly in these texts. Verse 19 of chapter 9, 1 Corinthians. For though I am free with respect to all, I've made myself a slave to all so that I might win more of them. To the Jew I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so that I might win those under the law. To those outside the Torah I became as one outside the Torah, though I'm not free from God's Torah, but am under Christ's Torah, so that I might win those outside the Torah. To the weak I became weak, so that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all people, that I might by all means save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, so that I may share in its blessing. Over the next 400 years, after Paul's time, Christianity drifted farther away from the Torah-oriented and thoroughly Hebraic faith that was what it started. 400 years, Christianity severed the root which had sustained it. Jews in the Torah way were viewed as irrelevant at best. Gentile Christianity had replaced biblical Israel. Gentile Christians laid claim to the scriptures that were protected and brought forward by the Jewish people. The words were spiritualized. The message was reinterpreted. The old covenant was replaced by a new. The old was passing away, superseded, obsolete, abrogated, and done away with. Jews and the Torah were considered damned and detestable. There's a quote in James's book from Constantine in 325 in the first great Christian council at Nicaea. It says, this is from Constantine. Everybody hear of the Council of Nicaea? I've been in churches where people talk about thank God for that council because it kind of got things straight. Here's a quote. Let us then have nothing in common with the detestable Jewish crowd, for we have received from our Savior a different way. The footnote says such pronouncements by leading Christians became more pronounced and vile as time went on. Jews were regularly charged with murdering Christ and were called serpents, servants of Satan, and so forth. Got a couple more quotes from you. This book is actually a good book, Restoration, Returning the Torah of God to the Disciples of Jesus. I think it's a good book. I think this D. Thomas Lancaster did an excellent job. It appears from reading this book that one of his primary points is to point believers, Christians, towards a more Torah-oriented faith. So I have nothing but respect for this author. Very good book. My class, he would probably not agree with what I'm talking about. Or he may not. But I wanted to use his book as a source because he had some of these quotes from the church fathers in his work. One of the church fathers, Ignatius, wrote this: "Let us therefore no longer keep the Sabbath after the Jewish manner and rejoice in days of idleness, but let every one of you keep the Sabbath in a spiritual manner, not in relaxation, not in eating things prepared the day before, not in finding delight in dancing and clapping, which have no sense in them." Now, why would you do that? So this is what he says. You know, all that silly religious stuff. Don't you know how those Jews are? They like to clap and praise God. Amazing. Justin Martyr, here's another quote from him. Explained to Trypho, there was this this debate back and forth, and he says, Justin Martyr explains to Trypho and all the Jews that the Torah was given to Jews as a punishment for their exceptional wickedness and because of God's special hatred for the Jewish people. He said, "We too would observe your circumcision of the flesh, your Sabbath days, and in a word, all your festivals, if we were not aware of the reason why they were imposed upon you, namely because of your sins and your hardness of heart." Yet even in Justin Martyr's day, about 153 of the Common Era, there were believers who still practiced the laws of Torah, both Jewish and non-Jewish believers. These quote-unquote weak-minded brothers, he reluctantly conceded, were still saved despite their foolish insistence on observing the laws of Moses. You see how it's so negative, though? The church fathers really took a negative approach to anyone who would put this burden on the believers. One other quote I had here. In the late 4th century, John Chrysostom delivered a series of sermons in Antioch against the Jews and against the Judaizers among the Christians. Listen to this. "What is this disease? The festivals of the pitiful and miserable Jews are soon to march upon us one after the other and in quick succession. The Feast of Trumpets, the Feast of Tabernacles, the fast, i.e. the Day of Atonement. There are many in our ranks who say that they think as we do, yet some of these are going to watch the festivals, and others will join the Jews in keeping their feast and observing their fast. I wish to drive this perverse custom from the church right now. But now that the Jewish festivals are close by and are at the very door, if I should fail to cure those who are sick with the Judaizing disease, they may partake in the Jews' transgressions." This is just the tip of the iceberg. For hundreds of years, the message went forth that the Torah is no longer a valid part of the way. I've got two words for all of you that hear me tonight. Wake up. Wake up. We have indeed fallen, but not from grace. We've fallen from instruction. People who claim, "I'm not under the Torah," are really saying, "I need not the instruction and teaching of God in my life." And that is a dangerous and bad place to be. Look at Daniel chapter 9. Daniel chapter 9, beginning in verse 3. Listen to this prayer. I've read it before in another class, but I think this is what we ought to be saying. Then I turn to the Lord God to seek an answer by prayer and supplication with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. And I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession, saying, Ah, Lord, great and awesome God, keeping covenant and steadfast love with those who love you and keep your commandments. We have sinned and done wrong, acted wickedly and rebelled, turning aside from your commandments and ordinances. We've not listened to your servants, the prophets, who spoke in your name to our kings, our princes, our ancestors, and to all the people of the land. Righteousness is on your side, O Lord, but open shame as it is this day falls on us, the people of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and all Israel, those who are near and those who are far away, in all the lands to which you've driven them, because of the treachery that they've committed against you. Open shame, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, falls on us, our kings, our officials, and our ancestors, because we've sinned against you. To the Lord our God belong mercy and forgiveness, for we've rebelled against Him. We've not obeyed the voice of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, our God, by following His laws, which He set before us by His servants, the prophets. When you read this, you can read the entire prayer. He recognizes that calamity has come upon the people because they've rebelled against the way of God. They've rejected His commandments. They've rejected His Torah. Yeshua, the historical Nazarene, declared that there would be a falling away. In Matthew 24, He even associated this falling away with an increase in lawlessness. The falling away deals with a Torah-less faith. Ironically, this apostasy, this falling away, has been based upon the writings of Paul, whether it's a misunderstanding or not. In fact, Paul's own warning of the coming apostasy is probably the most well-known in Scripture. He talks about there'll come a falling away. But when people contact me and say, you've fallen away or you've fallen from grace, they're looking at the falling away totally different than I am. Ah, but don't give up because the Protestants are coming. The Protestants would come and they would be credited with a resurrection of true faith, right? Martin Luther, one of the most famous, would pen numerous encyclicals. Here are a couple of the titles for you. Against the Sabbath Keepers. In other words, he wrote against those who would keep the thing that God says is forever. He would write a paper against those who would attempt to take hold of the covenant, as Isaiah 56 says, who call the Sabbath a delight. Martin Luther, in his attempt to restore the true faith, would stand against those who sought to live according to the way of God. He wrote another one called Against the Judaizers. I wrote a paper on my blog August the 27th, 2007. I typed in a phrase, preaching Moses, on August the 26th, 2007. And I was looking to see, is there anyone else out there who says, I'm preaching Moses, because I like that phrase, you know. And I found a sermon written by Martin Luther on August the 27th, 1527. You ought to read that. Because in that paper, he talks about how Moses means nothing to him. And anyone who seeks to live according to the Torah, you know, he has certain words to say about him. In 1543, Luther published one of these encyclicals called On the Jews and Their Lies. In this work, Luther would condone and advocate the burning of synagogues and forced conversions. Some even suggest that, and to some degree provide evidence that Adolf Hitler only put Luther's plans into action. Now, take a deep breath. While Yeshua opposed some of the interpretations and views of some of the religious leaders of his day, he also said things like this: salvation is of the Jews. Right? We know what we worship. Who's he talking about? We. The Jews. He taught in the synagogue and in the temple daily. He was a Jew. Yeshua was not a Christian. He never went to church. He never carried a New Testament. He would be offended if you called his Bible the Old Testament. He would be offended if you told him, "You're not under the Torah. You're not under the law, Jesus." He would be offended at that. Because he was born under the Torah. He proclaimed the Torah to the congregation. He had disciples that he taught, "This is the way, walk ye therein." That's right. He was circumcised on the eighth day into the Abrahamic covenant. His flesh. He also believed in a circumcision of heart that's talked about in the Hebrew Bible, Deuteronomy 10, Deuteronomy 30, Jeremiah chapter 4. That wasn't something new to him. When he talked to Nicodemus and he talked about you must be born again, that had nothing to do with Paul's theology. He told Nicodemus, "You're a teacher in Israel and you don't understand these things?" Being a born again person, if you said, "Yeshua, are you a born again Christian?" he'd say, "What's a Christian?" If you're asking me if I'm born again, born from above, if you're asking me if my heart is circumcised, if you're asking me on my heart are the words of the Torah inscribed, absolutely. But if your definition doesn't align with the Torah's definition, he wouldn't, first of all, even know what you were talking about. He was called a rabbi. When someone asks Yeshua, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" he answered very simply and very shortly, "Keep the commandments." And yet, the message that is proclaimed in his name in churches all around this globe is that if you try to keep the commandments, if you try to live by the law, then you have fallen from grace. That's what people are teaching. That is absolutely not what Yeshua would teach. In fact, he would agree with Psalm 19 that says that the Torah can convert the soul. The Torah. He said that the Torah was eternal. As long as heaven and earth endure, he would say, not one jot, not one stroke of a letter will pass. That's what Yeshua said. If you said, "Yeshua, do you believe that the Torah is passing away?" he would say, "Are you out of your mind? Passing away? The Torah is ultimately going to go forth to all nations." He said, "I tell you what I will say. I would say that anyone who breaks the least of these commandments and teaches others to break the least of the commandments will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does the least of the commandments and teaches the least of the commandments will be called great in the kingdom of heaven." That's what Yeshua said. Yeshua would have believed that the commandment is a lamp and the Torah is a light. That's what he would believe. In fact, he told his followers to be a light. He's most likely referring to Isaiah 42, to be a light unto the nations. Look at Hosea chapter 4. Hosea 4 and 6. Now, I used to... This is a verse that I remember memorizing years and years ago. My people, Hosea 4, 6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And that's all I used to quote. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Get the rest of it. Because you've rejected knowledge, I reject you from being a priest to me. And since you have forgotten the Torah of your God, I also will forget your children. The Torah of God. People are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Specifically, the Torah. Interestingly enough, the prophets, as my Bible was arranged growing up, the last word that we get in the prophets in Malachi, chapter 4, verse 4, chapter 3, verse 22 in the Hebrew, what does it say? Don't forget the Torah of my servant Moses. The last thing, please, the last word, don't forget the teaching of my servant Moses. And it is the thing that was forgotten. The promised new covenant says nothing at all, or even hints, that the Torah will be done away with. In fact, as I stated earlier, the Torah will be written on the hearts. Ezekiel chapter 36 talks about, Ezekiel says, create within me a new heart. Take the stony heart away, Ezekiel says. Right? Create a soft heart. Because that's talking about a heart upon which can be written the teaching of God. Ultimately, the Torah will go forth to all nations. Look at Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah 2. Beginning in verse 2, in days to come, the mountain of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be raised above the hills. All the nations shall stream to it. Many people shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, to the house of the God of Jacob, that He may teach us His ways and that we may walk in His paths. For out of Zion shall go forth Torah and the word of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh from Jerusalem. This is talking about a time not yet, a time that is to come when people, Gentiles, will say, let's go up. Zechariah 8:23 says, and in that day, 10 men from all the languages of the nations will grab the kanaf, the hem of the garment of him that's a Jew, and say, we will go with you, for we know that God is with you. Not this arrogance that we hear now from the pulpits that says, come with us and let us show you a more perfect way. Christianity and all of the faiths which have come forth from the Hebrew Bible need to focus again on its words. Because what begins to happen when people start to read their Bibles? God begins to teach them. The prophets say that that's going to happen. Ezekiel 34 says, as shepherds have not fed my sheep, I will feed my own sheep. And what I'm finding is that people from all over the world, literally, are in their homes. They're reading their Bible and they are adopting biblical teaching as their path to God. They're stopping things that they did which were brought to them in the form of some religious tradition, and they're adopting biblical faith as their own. For me, I stand with David. I stand with Yeshua. I stand with Moses and the prophets and countless souls throughout history who viewed the Torah as David did, as the way and the truth and the life. Those terms speak of the Torah. For me, the Torah is not a ministry of death, but the very words of the living God. It was delivered once and for all with power and displays of fire and pillar of cloud at Sinai amid the sound of a trumpet that grew louder and louder and louder. Lightning was striking. I am convinced that Yeshua appointed His first followers to this ancient and forsaken way. If there are others, whether called apostles, church fathers, popular evangelists, preachers, teachers, who teach or proclaim any other way, even if they or an angel from heaven tells you another way than that which I have proclaimed, let them be cursed, because they've departed from the way. Psalm 119, verse 126 says, "It is time for you to act, O God, for they consider your Torah void." What has happened in our day is that people have taken the eternal words of the living God, the thing that brought life, and whether from misunderstanding or misapplication, have taught people that that way is no longer open or valid, and they're wrong. The way of God has been the same. God says He changes not. It was taught by all the prophets. It was taught by Yeshua of Nazareth. Until next week, Shalom.
Thank you for listening to Roots of Faith today. For more information, please visit our website at www.rootsoffaith.org. Until next time, Shalom.